Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you'll find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com, or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I am doing great. Preparing for the Thanksgiving feast to come and looking forward to it. We're going to have a big time around our place. How about you guys?
You know, I was just thinking, this is the only official not even that it's actually official for most people, but it ends up being official 3-day work week in the whole year.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that is our only 2-day holiday, right? Thanksgiving.
Well, it's always on a Thursday, which is interesting. I wonder why that decision was made, that it was a Thursday and not, you know, if you're going to put it on one day of the week to give everybody a day off, why Thursday and not Friday or Monday? That's a little different. And then so typically everybody gets Friday off too, and so with a 3-day work week.
I would like to think that back in the day, because it was under the President Lincoln's administration, I believe, that they first instituted Thanksgiving. I would like to think Congress talked about this and they said, let's do it on Friday, and then you get a nice 3-day weekend, and somebody goes, wait a minute. Hold on. What if you did it on
some
Thursday?
Hey, wait, hold on. We can even do better.
Slow down. Hear me out, okay? What if we put it on Thursday, okay? Then Friday could become this big shopping day leading up to Christmas, right? You could have NFL games on Thursday. Oh, and, you know, they just plan the whole thing out. There'd be a big parade, helium balloons. Those guys were geniuses.
I mean, the founders and all the way up through Lincoln's time, just absolutely, we're standing on the shoulders of giants, no doubt.
We are, and grateful to be, as we'll get into in our topic here this evening. But before we do a couple of show notes, well, one major show note is we should note that we're coming to you less than live this evening. We're recording ahead of time in order to free the both of us up to participate in family activities the Wednesday evening before Thanksgiving. So the show's running, and it's the first time anyone's heard it here on Wednesday evening, but we've actually recorded it a day early. So a little bit of a time warp, a little bit of time travel there for those of you who like that sort of thing. We usually do that when there's a guest involved. I'm trying to think, how often have we ever done this when it's just the two of us on the show? Not that frequently, have we?
I think we may have done it on a Thanksgiving before.
Okay.
I think this is not the first time we've pre-recorded a Thanksgiving show, but that's about the only time. Yeah, usually if it's just me and you, Phil, we're going to do it live on Wednesday night so we can, you know, interact with the chat room a little bit and that sort of thing. So this is, it's a little different, but it's cool.
Yeah, and hey, chat room, don't think we're not reading the chat, okay?
Yeah, that's right. Don't go crazy out there, you know.
Just because we've been recorded doesn't mean we're not, we've completely dropped the ball here. We're still totally paying attention. Well, I think it's fun to pre-record because we talked last week on our 250th show about options going forward, and we're looking at possibilities around expanding the Fast Forward Radio staff. And one of the things you and I have been talking about now is the possibility we might add video as a dimension. We're going to be talking to Socrates, the host of Singularity One-on-One here in a few weeks, and he does his show that way. He pre-records, and it's a video show as much as it is a podcast. So you actually see him and you see his guests. So it's like there's Nicola there on the left, and there's Ray Kurzweil on the right, and that's a pretty cool format. So that's something we might think about doing. But if we go that route, we will probably pre-record the shows because the alternative to that is to live stream. And I've looked at some of these live stream services, and they're fairly expensive. So until we're better funded, if we add video, we lose live. So it might be something where if we add video, we don't do every show video. We do some audio, some video, some live, some pre-recorded. There's a lot of options, and it's fun to play around with this. Kind of takes us back to the early days of Fast Forward Radio when we didn't know what we were doing, and we tried a lot of different things. And I think we've kind of entered a new phase of trying different things, and it's going to be interesting to see where the show takes us.
Absolutely. And you know, another benefit of pre-recording video shows, you know, there will be no wardrobe malfunctions at all.
That's correct, yes.
And if there were to be one, it would be edited out. So, you know, it's still a family show. So I mean, it always will be. So.
Do you know my greatest fear, I got to tell you, of video, is that I'll be like scratching my nose and that it will get out of hand. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to go any further than that. That's, you know, like I'm not thinking and the camera's on me and that happens. Not, I don't want anyone listening to think that has ever occurred during the audio version. But, you know, but what if the first time it ever happened was, you know, on video?
Knowing your luck. So, yeah, that's a good thing to edit out also.
That would also be edited out. No one would ever see that.
Exactly.
That's right. That's worse than a wardrobe malfunction, I think. And we would definitely want to not do that. But speaking of how, you know, we're trying new things, we were talking before the show started here, and one thing that it has become a tradition, as you've noted, is we do a Thanksgiving show. It seems like we do one just about every year because we're on Wednesday night. We're always mindful of the fact that it's the week of Thanksgiving, and I think we're probably the only singularity-aware podcast, the only program of our kind that deals with accelerating change and nanotechnology and artificial intelligence and the kinds of topics that we deal with, that also regularly does a Thanksgiving show. That I think that sets us apart just a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, that's probably some reasons for that. But, hey, we got a lot to be thankful for. We live in an exciting time. You know, I mean, just look back on history, and you don't have to go that far back. You know, I mean, 50, 75 years, it was just a tougher way to live, even as recently as that. And so we've got it good. And every now and then we should just kind of, you know, reflect on that a little bit. And it kind of fits in with what we do anyway. You know, we spend a lot of time just saying, wow, isn't it great to be living here in the future?
it's really true. I feel that there's a danger. When I wrote the show description, and I talked about how we want to be anticipatory about the future. Well, you know, I personally am very excited about the future, that we want to look forward to the future. And what does that say about how do we feel about the present? What does that say about how we feel about the past? Well, I think that that it makes good sense for us to look at them in a very positive way as well. But I think the danger is that becomes all too easy, and this then becomes viewed as this kind of Pollyanna-ish view of life. You know, oh, we're all excited about the future, and we think everything was great then, and everything's great now, and everything's going to be great in the future. You know, it's not that. It's not just a simple-minded, put-on-a-happy-face approach to life that leads me to say, I think we should be grateful. It's actually a recognition of the fact that reality requires us to recognize what's happening in the world. And, you know, you're talking about things 75 years ago. What I like is that opening sequence in Matt Ridley's book, The Rational Optimist, where he talks about life a little bit farther back than that. He paints this wonderful scene of life in a log cabin, probably, 150 years ago. And this is, and he starts out, and it sounds very idyllic, talking about the family sitting around the fire, dad's reading from the Bible, and, you know, and it sounds like this wonderful Little House on the Prairie kind of scene, and, you know, we're all kind of nostalgic and sentimental about that kind of scene. And then he deconstructs it, right? He starts talking about the reality of the life these people are living. You know, it's like it's dim in there. It doesn't smell very good. They're all kind of sick. They're by our standards, right? Sick. They're malnourished. Yeah. They all have like
they're
one
breathing,
change of
they're breathing
clothes.
In the fumes from the wood fire.
Yeah, you know, the dad, all of like 35, 40 years old, he's got a few years left to live. You know, they don't have any plumbing. None of them have ever been anywhere. None of them have ever heard a piano play. And the list goes on and on and on. And you realize that relative to people prior to that, these folks actually had it pretty good. There are people in the world even today who would look at their circumstances and say, sign me up. I'd like to be in their circumstances. So you can measure the progress that way. But we can look back at that and say, it's astounding how far we've come and the lives that most of us lead and more of us on this planet lead every day. You have to recognize that trend. I think to not recognize that trend, let me put it this way. You know, if being a Pollyanna and just stamping everything is great all over everything is being unrealistic, I think not realizing how good things are is also being unrealistic. And it's probably a greater danger because it doesn't open you up to recognizing the possibilities that lie ahead. That's the problem.
Yeah, you a person that's being unrealistic in that way may become depressed and not try. You know, I mean, at least the Pollyanna person would, you know, I mean, they might be, you know, preparing themselves for a huge letdown by being so Pollyannish, but at least they're going to get out there and try something, you know. Exactly. I think it pays to be realistic in all ways, both good and bad. So, absolutely.
Yeah,
we just have, you know what else, Phil? We have some opportunities to improve upon the world now. And, you know, and to me, I'm grateful that we're going to live to see improvements. You know, I like that sometimes even better than the possibility that someday we might, you know, live to see some sort of utopia or something. To me, the progress is going to be exciting to see as much as, the trip to get there is going to be as great as actually being there, I think. It's seeing some of these things happen.
I think about things like actually some of the stories we're going to talk about tonight, but things like a story we talked about a few months ago, the commercial availability of this exoskeleton for paraplegics. When you see that kind of development happen, I mean, this is something that was always science fiction our whole lives, and then suddenly it's real, and you look at people using this technology, and you look at and you consider the profound impact that has on their lives. When you see those kinds of things happening, and there are so many of those kinds of things happening, I despair that I'll ever even get a small handle on it over on Better All the Time and keep track of some of these things because there's just so many of them. There are so many amazing and wonderful things, life-transforming things happening. Because something like that, if you're not paraplegic and you haven't been in a wheelchair, you know, it's really hard to recognize the impact that something like that has on your life. And that's true across the board for so many of the things we talk about, treatments for cancer and other technologies that come along and just fundamentally change people's lives for the better. And I agree. It's a tremendous joy to just be alive at a time when you can see those things happening and know that there's more of those to come.
Well, you know, we don't even have to move from paraplegics to talk about other things. You know, the exoskeleton, that's one potential thing that's going to help paraplegics. There is an article in BBC News. Let's see, what's the date on this? The 18th of November, like 3 days ago when this show plays, it'll be 3 days old.
Okay.
No cell transplant. They have this little dachshund dog that's a paraplegic. Okay, they took no cells from this dachshund dog and injected them into the site of the spinal injury, and the little dog's running around again. So, and the Cambridge University team cautiously optimistic the technique could eventually have a role in the treatment of human patients.
This is really interesting because these cells from this dog's nose, they go in and they regenerate nerves, but these are not...
Stem cells, yeah. It's going to be stem cells I found in the nose.
But they're not like embryonic stem cells. They're just cells that they had to like change into something else, right? They were just there. Is that right?
That's right. Let me see if I can get you a few more details here. But yeah, I mean, the dogs had olfactory ensheathing cells from the lining of their nose removed. These were grown and expanded for several weeks in the lab, and then injected. So, pretty awesome.
Amazing. One of the things that's cool about that is we've talked about this a little bit before is as we discover more things, we discover more things that were, there's no way not to use this particular pun, sorry, under our nose all the time that we never saw before, right? I mean, this is just amazing.
The adjacent possible, you know.
Exactly.
That's the term that was used in one of the books. It might have been Matt Ridley's book, where imagine this huge mansion laid out in front of you, and all these different rooms that are connected to one another, and you can't access. You know, it's like I would love to be able to go to the very last room because that's the real treasure room where we've reached utopia once we get to the last room. Well, we're not in the last room. We're like maybe halfway through the mansion at this point.
Right.
And so the next big breakthrough is not going to be the huge treasure room, half the mansion away. It's the adjacent possible. It's the next thing that we build on the last things that we've done. And we've just kind of reached a point of, it's like it's spilling over the dam at this point. You know, we've reached a real neat time where we get to see so many things happen at once. And so... Yeah, it's an exciting time. Thankful for it.
Absolutely. Well, I think about when Christopher Reeve was still alive, and he was a big advocate for stem cell research. And I presume the controversy still goes on. You don't hear as much about it anymore, the controversy over embryonic stem cells. But that was a big deal probably around the time
I think one of the reasons you don't hear it is it's sort of been rendered moot by some of the research that that we've done that can take adult stem cells and basically turn them into polypurent, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Pluripotent, I believe, is the word you're looking for.
Thank you. Pluripotent stem cell, which is very much an embryonic cell equivalent. And guess what? It's better than some embryonic stem cell from some embryo that's not you. It is, if it's being grown from your cell, then it is, there's no danger of rejection. That's good medicine there, when you have a problem and you can deal with it with stem cells from your own body.
Yeah, well, it's really amazing when you look at that chain of progress. And it's really remarkable progress right there to go from embryonic stem cells, which, as you point out, there were all these issues. I mean, they were great. It's like, wow, they can. There's so much possibility here because they are pluripotent. They can become anything. But there's the issue of, well, they don't really match the DNA of the person that you're pumping them into. So there's workarounds for that, and you have to think about this, and you have to do that. And then someone says, wait a minute, what if we took somebody's actual cells, their own mature cells, and reverse engineered those back into pluripotent cells? That's a trick. That's not an easy thing to do. But they figured out a way to do that, and that's awesome, big process leading up to that. And then suddenly you get to this stage, and it's like, well, actually, what if you just grab pluripotent cells that happen to be in the body, stick them in the spine, and a few days later the dog's walking again,
Yeah, so basically you see three steps of the adjacent possible happening.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
It's extremely exciting.
When you think about... What I'm grateful for around this story is not only that a dog gets to walk again, and that people might get to walk again soon because of this kind of technology, but it's just that reminder that there is so much possibility all around us that's untapped, and that we're currently tapping, and that is just a tremendously exciting thing. Let me do another one along the same kind of lines. This was in the Scientific American, and the story was called "Print It: 3D Bioprinting Makes Better Regenerative Implants." And this is a technology that we've talked about a lot. We've talked about 3D printing quite a bit, and we've talked about the particular application that it has within medicine, within biotechnology. Over the past few years, the idea that this is actually kind of a parallel course. When you think about stem cells that had to be reprogrammed to work in somebody else's body, well, you know, an analogous situation is organ transplants, where an individual has lost the use of one or then both kidneys and they need a kidney. If you put someone else's kidney in their body, that's a great solution. Really hard to find the person, really difficult procedure, really dangerous procedure, puts the other person in a bad position because now they only have one kidney. I mean, there's just huge issues both about how wonderful that is and how treacherous that is, how dangerous that is. And then suddenly here's this other possibility. Well, you've got a machine that can essentially lay out layers and layers of cells and create increasingly complex structures in the same way that a laser printer can create a beautiful picture, a 3D printer can create a very complex and intricate structure out of whatever medium is being used in that particular printer, whether it's plastic or metal, or sometimes they use, you know, some of them make food, right? They work with a lot of different media. But some of these printers can actually print out cells. And increasingly what we're seeing is these printers are being used to print out what is approaching full functional organs. And it's the same basic idea we were talking about before. Rather than taking someone else's kidney and putting it into my body, which may end up rejecting it. Actually, they're pretty good now at getting bodies to accept other kidneys, I should say, because I've done so much work, and they've spent so much time perfecting that technique. But it's still very difficult, and all the problems I've mentioned. Well, how about this? Make your own kidney, right? Use your cells, make a kidney that is going to work in your body because it's part of your body from the get-go. We're still not quite there. That's still a very complex problem to solve, but as was demonstrated on a TED Talk a couple years back, where the basic structure of a kidney was printed on stage while the doctor was giving the talk, we're getting a lot closer to that. And as this article in Scientific American points out, incrementally we're taking steps and steps in that direction, to the point where I think that eventually the whole notion of transplantation is probably going to go away. If someone needs a new heart, someone needs a new kidney, someone needs a new lung, they're going to be able to produce those themselves, maybe eventually through cloning. But before then, I think probably through the use of a 3D printer and some very complex scaffolding and the production of an actual human organ using computer technology.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that they're doing with hearts, for example, is that they can take a cadaver heart and they denude it. They take out all the muscle cells and just have basically the structure. It's sort of a cartilage structure of the heart.
Right.
And then they can, you know, what they've been working towards being able to accomplish is then take stem cells and build a heart with presumably the patient's own stem cells, and then, you know, when they're done with that, what you have is a brand new heart that is native to the patient's body, that's ready to go and be implanted. You know, that way you could take any heart, any cadaver heart would do. You know, I mean, that's the big thing with these transplant lists is that you know, you need someone that's a very close match for the patient. Well, if you got a cadaver heart and then denuded it and then put the stem cells over and overlaid it on top of it, and presumably that would take a little time, but they would get faster and faster as they tend to do with things like that, and it would get less and less expensive too. And that would become just a great, great treatment for someone who needs a new heart. And, exciting to see that come about as well.
That's a really interesting thing. You know, it probably is going to make it all the more important that people be organ donors. Because what people will be leaving will be the basic structure for organs. Until the time comes, they'll be able to build those structures too. But during this during this intermediate phase, it'd be a lot simpler and a lot quicker if that basic platform is provided to give someone a new kidney, to give someone a new lung, to give someone a new heart, and they can just overlay their cells on top of it. I presume that organ donation as it currently exists will allow for that, but I don't know. I can almost sort of, as I say the sentence, I can almost foresee legal battles around this sort of thing coming. Who knows? What kind of interesting things will lie ahead.
My opinion, Phil, that's a lesser included thing. If you agree to be a organ donor and to give a whole heart, there would, you're actually, and they take it and they choose to use just the structure. I really don't see any legal issues there.
I don't either. You know. Yeah. But yeah. Then I so rarely do for things that end up being.
it's funny how, legal issues tend to pop up, but I would suggest to you that whatever the issues would pop up, they would be minor and could be worked around.
Yeah. Well, for sure, I'm an organ donor, and my philosophy has always been anything that you can grab that will help somebody else, have at it, right? To help yourself. And
I'm an organ donor as well, Phil, but I always laugh at the Chris Rock routine on that issue. I guess you're familiar with it, huh?
And no, what does he say?
Chris Rock says, that's for a person who doesn't have any faith in the ability of science to bring back people from the dead later, You die from the dead, but you don't have any eyes, at any rate.
well, that's true. I mean, that does show that you and I are not currently signed up for Alcor, right? That we're organ donors, because those two are, I guess, pretty much mutually exclusive. Although, I guess if you're signed up just for the head program on Alcor, they're not going to take your eyes then, but the rest of your body would still potentially be
it'd be open field. And quite frankly, if I'm going to do Alcor at all, it'll just be. Just ahead, because I feel like in the future they ought to be able to do better than what I'm more currently walking around with. So, absolutely.
Yes. Well, and it's cheaper too, is the other thing. But
a whole lot cheaper.
Sidebar. We're going to do a show on the economics of cryogenics one of these days, because we got into that in our debate, and it would be fun to explore that in a whole show, but we're straying from things we're grateful for. So far we're thankful, we're grateful for medical treatments. What else we got on the list, Stephen? What's outside of that realm that evokes feelings of gratitude on your part?
Well, this is sort of a interesting thing. I said earlier, I'm grateful to be living in a time that there's always these new things that are happening and surprising us. Sometimes, the anticipation can be as much fun as the actual learning of what the actual development is. Have you heard that the Curiosity rover? They are they're saying we found something big, and this is going to change history and all this other stuff. Did you hear that announcement earlier today?
Unless it turns out to be nothing. Right.
It's either going to be really, really great, or it's going to be nothing. Now, the rover that they sent, it's the size of an SUV. Okay, it's a monster truck on Mars. Okay,
right.
And it's got all these different little labs and things in it, and it's really set up for the purpose of finding the chemical precursors of life are life itself, And so if they're saying they've got something big, I'm thinking it doesn't necessarily have to be microbial life, but it could be something that would be a precursor to it. They might have found, unmistakable water or something like that, or maybe you know, the building blocks of life, some amino acids or something. But the way they're talking, though, they're talking like it's something pretty big. I'm looking, you know, I'm thankful we got that to look forward to in the next few days. We're going to hear here's something interesting, one way or the other, even if it's just a colossal.
nothing to see here. Yeah. Well, I agree. Actually, I think it's really exciting that possibility is sitting there, and it's great to have seen all the things that I've seen happen on Mars in my lifetime. Actually, I've lived long enough that I got to see the first man walk on the moon. I saw the first images come back live from Mars, and if this does turn out to be something, it's cool to be a witness to whatever it is we're about to discover about Mars, assuming that we do discover something. But I actually deliberately avoided linking to that story just because it had the whole, well, we're covering our bait. We're not going to say for sure. We think it's huge. It reminded me so much of, I don't know if you read Best of the Web, James Taranto. He does he does this feature called Out on a Limb, you know, where somebody always covers both possibilities, right? It's like, well, this is either going to be the biggest thing ever or it's nothing, right? It's like, oh, okay, well.
Well, you know, I get the feeling that it's a little bit, you know, I'm pretty sure it's something big or they wouldn't have said anything. It's a little bit like, my thought is, the first announcements we started getting about the Higgs boson.
Right.
They were pretty sure they had it. But, you know, we're not ready to publish it yet, you know, because we haven't reached 5 sigma yet, you know.
Right.
But we're pretty sure we've got it. Well, you know, I feel like I get the feeling that they're pretty sure they got something, and I'm looking forward to hearing what that something is.
Me too. Yeah. It could be anything. Yeah, really complex organic molecules. Could be, what if it's DNA? You know, they found some DNA on Mars. What would that mean? What would that imply? The possibilities are pretty staggering. I'm not sure it'll be days, though. The article I read made it sound like they're going to wait. They're dotting their I's and crossing their T's before they come back and say anything. So it could be could be kind of a leader like we had for the Higgs boson. It seems like we heard about it, and then it was several weeks later before the final announcement was made. Right?
Yeah, it seemed like it stretched on and on. But Higgs boson turned out to be great. We got the big news on it, and so I've got my fingers crossed on this one too. So, how about you, Phil? You got something else that you're thankful about?
Well, speaking of Singularity 101 and Singularity Weblog here, Socrates has a story up there about Michio Kaku, and the story is called "Can Technology Create Utopia?" And this is actually his talk at Big Think, and he talks about why. The dreams of utopia, the dreams of the perfect society have never been realized, even though people throughout history have tried to create them. And he says that the reasons they haven't been realized is because we've always had scarcity, but that technology, nanotechnology in particular, is going to lead to massive abundance, is going to be the end of scarcity, and maybe in 100 years we'll have digital replicators of matter, which will create abundance beyond what anyone can really even grasp today, and enter utopia. Now, as you know, Stephen, I'm a skeptic about capital U utopias. I'm kind of a small U utopia guy myself. I think that that the world can be radically transformed and that circumstances can be improved beyond measure. And you're still not in the transcendental place you were hoping to be in. I don't think utopias exist in that sense.
But you always find something to gripe about, you know.
Right, and this goes to the whole idea of gratitude. Actually, it's almost impossible not to take your amazing, wonderful circumstances for granted. And that's why it's a good idea to stop once in a while and say, wait a second, look at the life that we're leading, right? I mean, we talk about this one all the time, the fact that we live better than a medieval king lived, you know, just in terms of the information that's available to us, the healthcare that we have, the breadth of diet that we eat, the entertainment that we can enjoy. Just in every way, our lives are better than even the richest people in the world from a few centuries ago. But we don't think of ourselves as being, you know, happy as kings most of the time, because we're just regular people living in the regular world. And that's what happens when, quote-unquote, utopia kicks in. No matter how good it gets, if I've got a digital replicator and you've got a digital replicator and I can make anything I want and you can make anything you want and yours works, you know, 14% faster than mine, I'm miserable, right? It's like, oh, how can, right? How can life
so
even go
time.
On, right? There will always be. You've read Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So Cory Doctorow's novel
Cory Doctorow. Anything he writes, I recommend.
It's wonderful, wonderful book about people living in a post-mortality, post-scarcity. Amazing world that is familiar to us because a lot of the same stuff is there, but is completely different from our world because they don't really have government the way we do, and people just kind of live their life doing interesting little creative projects, and there are these ad hocs, these groups who take on different projects. The whole thing is set in the Magic Kingdom. It's set in Disney World, and there are these two competing groups who want to have control, I think, of the Haunted Mansion in Disney World, you know, and it's like these people, they don't know what poverty is. They can't get sick. They can't die. And yet their lives are full of drama and angst and pain and violence and fear because two different groups want to take control of the Haunted Mansion in Walt Disney World. And it makes the point perfectly, right? That you never really get to utopia, right? Because people find reasons to struggle, and they find reasons to be unhappy. That maybe in some sense a little bit of unhappiness is sort of what continues propelling us forward, I suppose. But that's why I disagree that we'll ever get to utopia. But I think that we will get to a world that, if we could look at it from here, we would say, "Wow, that's utopia."
Yeah. It's a mirage. As you approach it, it seems to dissipate. But, things get better. I mean, I guess we just get spoiled of things so easily, so quick. There was this one comedian that was talking about taking a plane ride where they, for the first time, were, you know, turning on Wi-Fi, in-flight Wi-Fi, and they basically explained to the passengers, "Well, we've got Wi-Fi now for you. This is the first time we've ever had it. We're kind of, it's a beta test. It might be just a little bit spotty, but we're going to try this out, and I hope you enjoy it. If you have any Wi-Fi devices, turn them on." So his neighbor right next to him, like, turns on his computer, and he's doing something, and, of course, after about 10 or 15 minutes, it kind of blinks out for a little bit. And, he starts cursing. He's so upset, you know. He's like,
"Yeah, I can't believe this, man." Yeah.
He's all messed. He's all upset. You know, forgetting for a second that he's flying at 30,000 feet, you know, in the sky, you know.
Right. Well,
the
comedian was Louis C.K., right? And he says, you know, how quickly the universe owes him this thing that he had never even heard of. Right, like 5 minutes before, and he was delighted that he had it. Right, and suddenly, five minutes later, it's an affront that he doesn't have it. But that encapsulates the whole idea perfectly. Right, that's why there's no utopia. The guy forgot to be grateful. He forgot to be thankful for the 5 minutes of Wi-Fi that he had, and that capability exists from now on. That he would get to use it in the future. I love that. That is one of the most brilliant bits ever. It was Louis C.K. talking on Conan several years ago, I think.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff. he really sums the idea up, basically, right?
So
there.
Basically, this whole show tonight, it's about the whole idea that we don't want to be that guy. You know?
we can't help but be that guy, but we're going to try our best not to be that guy more than we have
to. Not to be that guy. Because we love the Wi-Fi just as much as he does, you know. But we're going to try to at least be mindful enough to understand that it's pretty awesome when you get the Wi-Fi and the jet plane, you know.
Yes. Well,
and everything else that comes.
Stephen, the one difference, of course, is that the universe really does owe us the Wi-Fi. Now, granted, you will agree on that point. I'm sure.
You're being that guy, Phil.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. I didn't mean to be that guy, but yeah. So I look forward to this period of tremendous abundance, and I hope to remember to be grateful for it when it comes, and to remember that when it comes, that to people back in this age, that will have looked like a utopia, even though it won't actually be one. It will still be a regular world, and life will be hard, and we'll think we have these really serious, complicated lives, and we will. I mean, you know, not to demean our future selves, that our lives will be difficult and complicated, just in a way that sounds kind of easy to us from.
Sounds kind of awesome to us from our point of view today. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. So what's next, Stephen?
Well, let's see. You know, something we should be thankful for that we have here throughout the Western world is clean drinking water, right?
Mm.
And still the big killer. You pointed this out several times on the show, Phil. Still, the big killer in the world kills more people than anything else is diarrhea related to bad drinking water.
Yep.
You know, there's some exciting things that's being done about this, and I've mentioned this before in the show, but I thought I'd mention it again tonight. The slingshot that's being made by Dean Kamen and sponsored by Coca-Cola. That's an exciting technology. It came out of Dean Kamen's research in how dialysis patients could take tap water and use it in the dialysis process. Okay.
Right.
And
which
really
is great, by the way. Which is an awesome thing to make that available.
Very, very, very good. Very cool. Because tap water is while it's clean enough to drink, it's not clean enough to inject. Okay.
Right.
And so, you know, he's saying, okay, let's figure out a way to super clean water straight out of the tap so that people can use it at home to do that. And then, of course, it comes to him that, hey, this technology is number one, it cleans the water better than anything, you know, any other method that we can use because it's super clean. But it's also cheap enough that we could do it on make these machines that are about the size of a refrigerator and produce enough water for, you know, several families. And so he's started making these machines. He called it the slingshot, and it is an alteration. He used the same technology used in the dialysis machines but then altered it in such a way as to make drinking water. And basically the idea is you put one hose, the intake hose, in anything wet, be it ocean water with all its salt, you know, it could be even, I mean, you know, nastiest water you can imagine, straight out of a latrine. And anything wet can be made into, the cleanest drinking water imaginable. And I saw a video today showing some places in Africa where it's been implemented. And these kids are drinking it, and they were excited. Obviously, the Dean Kamen people were very excited, and I'm sure Coca-Cola is also very excited. It's a good thing to be behind, and that's the sort of thing I'm excited about. We get to live in a world where potentially we can conquer this thing that's just killing. You know, the statistic I heard is 20 million kids. It's 20,000 kids a day, okay? 20,000 kids a day from a combination of bad drinking water and bad nutrition.
Right.
And that, and it's mostly, when I say kids, it's mostly kids. It's mostly
right.
Children than it gets. And so that's a big thing. If we can continue to roll out things like that and solve that problem, that's a lot of human suffering that can be alleviated, and we can see that in just the next few years. So
yeah, well, I mean, you can talk about being thankful to have lived to see a human being walk on the moon, and I am. But if we actually live to see the day when anyone in the world has access, everyone in the world has access to clean drinking water, that is a breakthrough of staggering proportions, unprecedented proportions. I mean, there's your utopia right there. You know, I mean, there's
right.
there's a world that couldn't even be imagined at any time prior in history, and now it is possible, and we're moving in that direction, and that's pretty astounding stuff. All right, I've got another one. I know we're getting close on our time, and we want to throw a few more of these out here. Another medical one. This was amazing. Breakthrough nanoparticle halts multiple sclerosis in mice and offers hope for other immune-related diseases. Now, this is really interesting. It's a biodegradable nanoparticle, and it serves as a vehicle that delivers an antigen that tricks the immune system of the mouse into stopping its attack on the myelin. And that is key to shutting down multiple sclerosis. So it works in this variation of multiple sclerosis that's called, I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time spitting out the term multiple sclerosis this evening, what's called relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis, MS, and this shuts that whole process down. So this is huge. This is not a cure. I don't think that that this says you no longer have it, but it stops it where it is, so it does not degenerate any further. And obviously, if a treatment like that can be transferred over to humans, then it's just a matter of catching people as early as possible in the development of multiple sclerosis, and you can actually stop the progress of the disease, it being a degenerative disease. This is a huge, huge potential step forward, and very interesting that it's a nanoparticle. It's just this one little particle. You put it in there, and it's magic, right? It just gums up the works, and it does exactly what we've always hoped nanomedicine would do, right? It's the one magic bullet you put in, and it shuts the disease down.
Yeah, it takes a problem and stops it, and so it provides hope for other diseases. That includes things like HIV, specific?
Potentially. I mean, let me see what the article says. They talk about it applying to other immune related diseases, and that would be the big one that comes to mind for sure. Let me see if I see HIV mentioned in particular. I don't actually see it mentioned, but you know what, Stephen, the idea is there, even if. Even if this particular particle doesn't interfere in that way, it's interesting to note that life is this really complex process that depends on step A leading to step B, leading to step C. Well, it turns out, you know what, diseases are the same thing, right? And you can botch them up the same way a disease can botch up the progress of life. So all you have to do is get into the process of multiple sclerosis at the right point with the exact right nanoparticle, the one that has the exact right effect, and it just completely turns it off. Yeah, I'd like to think that something like that might work with HIV and might work with any number of other immune. There are a lot of autoimmune difficulties that people have, allergies and more serious versions of those diseases. Be very interesting to track this and see where this research leads. It's very exciting stuff.
Awesome stuff. You know, we spent a lot of time talking about medicine tonight, haven't we? There's just a plethora of exciting things happening in various areas of medicine. A lot of it involves nanotech. You got 3D printing of organs potentially. I mean, just all these, all these different avenues, and things like exoskeletons.
Yep.
And what we haven't mentioned is Watson becoming an MD. The AI systems that are that could become, some of the greatest doctors ever. So it's just exciting times that we're living in.
Absolutely. Well, I've got two others that I won't spend too much time on. One is just, if you didn't think you had good reason to be grateful to be alive, you have to read this piece over in the Wall Street Journal by Matt Ridley, the guy who wrote The Rational Optimist, called "Does Survival of the Sexiest Explain Civilization?" And he makes a very credible case for the fact that. That we're getting sexier over time, that sexier people are reproducing. I mean, very logical kind of argument. Really substituting sexiest for fittest, where you normally hear that term, survival of the fittest. And essentially just telling you, well, I guess we live amongst the sexiest people that have ever walked the face of the earth, and of course they're only getting sexier, right? That's the that's the exciting part of that. But if you were going to be alive at a time when there were sexy people on the planet, Stephen, this is it. This is
You know, there's this gag. I think it was in Hot Shots Part Deux, or whatever, the second one or whatever.
Part Deux,
yeah. Yeah, Part Deux. yeah, he's living in a monastery, and you know, they come and try to talk him out of you know, come back and join the battle or whatever. You know, get away from this monastery. He says, no, I'm going to live the life of a celibate, like my father and his father before him. You know, that's the one. I mean, that's the one thing that, you know, you pretty much you have to have sex if you want to have children. Pretty much at this point. I mean, you know, science might come to the aid of those who don't wish to have sex but still want to have kids at some point. But for the most part, the world is you know, from generation to generation. If there are people that would want to be celibate, their genes don't get passed on. And so, yeah, it, you know, his thesis makes sense, you know.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, where my family is from in Kentucky, there were settlements of the Shakers. They were a big religious movement in the 19th century,
yeah. And
they don't exist anymore. And, you know, they were this very intense, very devoted, very devout group of people, kind of like the Mormons. In some ways, I mean, it's the same time period,
yeah.
And same kind of zeal behind the movement, and they completely died out. And you think, well, Mormons, you know, they're still going like gangbusters. What's the difference? Well, the Shakers believed in no sex whatsoever, even between married people. And that's, you know, it's really hard to get a religion going or anything going.
It's, you know, can you imagine trying to sell that to a crowd? Okay, here's the deal, guys. You know, we're gonna, you know, we're gonna be this great devout group, and guess what? No sex.
I'll tell you, it worked on that first group, but you know what? They didn't have anybody to pass that on to.
I guess they couldn't get
enough outsiders excited. Okay, we're almost out of time, but I have to say I was actually leading to something with the sexiest.
Okay.
If that's not enough for you, okay, if living amongst the sexiest people that have ever lived is not enough for you, then I've also got this story from Design Boom. Tokyo's first robot restaurant hosts giant fembot fights. Now, that I even understand what that headline means. Okay, is reason to be grateful. Our friend Jab says that the food's not very good at this restaurant, but he is going to go back and check out the Fembots just for the purposes of science. So thank you, Jab, for that sacrifice that you're willing to make for us, and we look forward to a full report on the giant fighting Fembots. And I'll put a link up on the Speculist, because I think everyone really needs to check these out. They actually are giant female robots, and apparently they do fine with each other. And if you can't get excited about that, then I'm sorry, you just listen to the wrong show. Okay, you know.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
That's my final word on the subject. Okay, Stephen, any parting thoughts, or should we move on to our music this week?
Well, happy Thanksgiving, everybody, and we will be back live next week at our regular time. Right?
Absolutely, and a happy Thanksgiving to you, Stephen, and to your whole family.
All right, thank you. Our music tonight is Dead Skeletons by Marvelous Pirates.
Marvelous Pirates singing Dead Skeletons. Thanks for putting that together, Stephen. Always a pleasure talking with you. Thanks to everyone listening to us semi-live this evening and participating in the chat room. Thanks for all of you for being part of Fast Forward Radio. And as Stephen said, we will be back again at our normal time live next week. And until next time, live to see it.
When he gets down to that.